Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
Stand by for news. I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Morning Show. And this morning we are going to hear from Elena Mosley. She talked to WGXC's Randall Martin about the Black Arts Festival coming up this weekend and her Operation Unite organization. We'll also hear Hugh Johnson about the smoke in the air and Lex Figueroa about the Proud Boys in Saratoga. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather and the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned. Can find out about so many local events like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to WGXC.org and clicking on the community calendar.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Melissa Dubin of Brooklyn, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe with the WGXC local news for Wednesday, August 9th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Patrick Tyne reports in the Times Union that Saratoga Springs Public Safety Commissioner James Montenegro now says that racist Proud Boys who briefly marched in his town on April 5th violated city rules by having a parade without a permit. Montenegro also said they came from Troy. That's if you believe the, quote, Uncle Sam's Proud Boys, unquote, business card that one of the marchers handed a police officer on August 5th. The Proud Boy with the business card told the police officer they were going somewhere else, and he watched them leave and alerted other law enforcement officers which way they were going. Quote, there were no further issues with the group, unquote, according to Montenegro's report. But Mayor Ron Kim said the report did not address the other laws the Proud Boys may have broken. Kim said, quote, there's a clear part of the parades ordinance that prohibits masks. This ordinance was passed in 2005. It wasn't done recently or directed towards Proud Boys or anybody else, unquote. He also suggested a noise ordinance could have been violated. Quote, it's clear they violated the law, unquote, Kim said. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Patricia R. Doxey reports for the Daily Freeman that last month the town of Saugerty settled a defamation lawsuit brought against Police Chief Joseph Sinagra for statements attributed to him in a 2021 Daily Freeman article. Michael Cook, who represented the town and Sinagra in the lawsuit, said, though they settled with Saugerty's resident Deborah L. Ferraro, there was, quote, no admission of guilt, unquote. If the town approves the settlement that is for an unknown amount, taxpayers will pay for it through the town's insurance carrier. Ferraro claimed that Sinagra defamed her in remarks in an April 29, 2021 Daily Freeman article about the arrest of Ferraro and Derek S. Winnie in connection with allegedly fraudulent business practices. The charges against Ferraro were later dismissed. Sinagra claimed that he did not make the statements attributed to him in the newspaper. Freeman publisher Kevin Corrado said they stand by their reporting. The town of Socrates has since placed Sinagra on paid administrative leave because of a different matter. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Heather Bellow reports in the Berkshire Eagle that sculptor Richard Blake has been chosen to create a monument to W.E.B. Du Bois in Great Barrington. Blake's model will be on display at the Mason Library beginning August 9th. The sculpture will be installed in front of the library in the fall of 2024. Blake beat out the other finalists, Vinnie Bagwell and Dana King. Project co-chair Julie Michael said, quote, "We were all that the outstanding talent of all three applicants. We are also delighted that the proposed figure has received such universal support from the community," unquote. W.E.B. Du Bois was an American sociologist, socialist, historian, and pan-Africanist civil rights activist born in Great Barrington. The sculptor, Blake, said, quote, "My public sculptures commemorate social activism and those who have contributed or fought for social justice. I want to shed light on often overlooked or marginalized American heroes of color," unquote. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle. Read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, August 9th. Local early morning temperatures range from 59 degrees in Tannersville to 69 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 72 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be in medium territory. However, air quality will be generally good today, and the dew points will be in the low 60s, so we'll be mostly comfortable even as the temperature hits 84 degrees at 4 p.m. No rain is expected. Same deal overnight. Pop those windows open at 9 p.m., but use discretion, as temperatures are expected to drop to 58 degrees. You'll be in the same territory, even up in the hills, which, I'm glad to hear, has been getting our signal. Fog early tomorrow gives way to spotty rain and a high temperature of 79. Rain ends overnight, giving us a muggy low of 60 degrees. We will have a dry Friday with lots of sun and a high of 81. Saturday looks warm and muggy with a high of 85 and some afternoon drizzles. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 4:40 a.m., high tide at 10:09 a.m., low tide again at 4:42 p.m., then high tide once again at 10:41 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 72 degrees and the tide strength will be low. Sunset today will be at 7:52 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:53 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 10%. Plasma winds will be slow at 365 kilometers per second with an average density of 8 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently, hey, look at that. They're fair below 22 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight with good conditions below 8 megahertz. There are no chances of aurora. The current sunspot number is 115, and this has been the better weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
The international struggles of our world may lead to
nuclear holocaust.
To survive, you must have protection from radioactive fallout.
In the past, heavy equipment necessitated a long, costly operation for out-of-home shelter installation.
Today, Survive All basement-type shelters offer a combination steel and concrete do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Civil defense approved, Survive All offers maximum protection from fallout and falling debris, plus a basic equipment kit for family survival.
There's low initial cost and FHA approval. Nothing down in 5 years to pay.
For your family's protection, see a Survive All shelter today.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
I mean, the patient advocates, the civil rights leaders, the abortion providers, and doctors from all sorts of specialties and everyday citizens really came together.
Kelly Copeland of Pro-Choice Ohio credits grassroots organizing in Tuesday's special election for the first of two victories needed to ensure Ohioans win a constitutional amendment to guarantee access to abortion. The proposal, known as Issue 1, would have raised the threshold for passing future constitutional changes from a simple majority to 60%. Reproductive rights groups had criticized the timing of the election when many voters are away on vacation, but polling places reported unprecedented voter turnout. Thousands of Los Angeles City employees walked off the job Tuesday for a 24-hour strike, alleging unfair labor practices. Simboa Wright with SIEU Local 721 says staff shortages are forcing workers to take on too much overtime.
I mean, we need help out here. We need the city to hire more people so we won't have to, work so much. We want to see our families.
Wright says union members, including sanitation workers, lifeguards, and traffic officers, voted to authorize the walkout because the city has failed to bargain in good faith or treat them with respect. The Supreme Court has voted to reinstate a regulation aimed at reining in so-called ghost guns or firearms without serial numbers. The vote puts on hold a ruling from a federal judge in Texas that invalidated the Biden administration's regulation of ghost gun kits. NYPD Inspector Courtney Nyland tells CNN the weapons are easily purchased online.
Right now, you could purchase either a gun kit or enough parts to build a fully functional Glock-style or SIG-style handgun for about $400.
Meanwhile, a federal judge has blocked Colorado from enforcing a new law raising the age to purchase a gun from 18 to 21. The White House held its first ever cybersecurity summit Tuesday on the ransomware attacks plaguing U.S. schools. Criminal hackers have released sensitive student data, including medical records, online. Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona says school districts will receive more funds and training for their cyber defenses.
We need to be taking these cyber attacks on school as seriously as we do the physical attacks on critical infrastructure.
Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey has declared a state of emergency as newly arrived migrants overwhelm the state's shelter system.
They're here because Massachusetts has and will always be a beacon of hope, compassion, humanity, and opportunity.
Healey is asking the federal government for more funding to house the 20,000 migrants as well as work permits. Massachusetts is the only state in the country with a right to shelter law, which guarantees homeless families access to emergency shelter. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Three bills signed by Oregon's governor August 4th expand automatic voter registration, protect voters who move within the state from losing eligibility, and allow the state to seek federal funding for Dropbox security. Voting Rights Lab reports that Governor Tina Kotek signed HB 2107, making the Oregon Health Authority one of the state's automatic voter registration locations. Residents enrolling in the state's Medicaid programs will also automatically be registered to vote unless they opt out. Another provision allows citizens registering to vote online to submit an electronic signature. Governor Kotek also signed SB 166, which protects the eligibility of voters who move within the state. You'll recall our report last week about Georgia's purge of registered voters, tens of thousands of whom had only moved within the state and were still eligible, but were disenfranchised in the 2020 and 2022 elections. SB 166 also allows voters who are out of state when ballots are mailed to request ballots earlier. Since 2000, Oregon votes primarily by mail. But the hyper-focus on Dropbox security since 2020 led to the signing of SB 1094, authorizing the state to seek federal funding for live streaming video of Dropboxes, as well as in ballot counting facilities. We have links to the new laws, the history of Oregon's successful vote-by-mail system, and groups taking action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Stay tuned to WGXC Creative Community Radio all day on Wednesday, August 9th. Maria Manhattan is live in the WGXC Hudson studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street for the Hudson Cafe at 11 a.m. Then we head across the Rip Van Winkle Bridge to Catskill at noon. After the local news, Spike Priggen speaks with Andy Chernoff, the founding member of the Dictators, legendary punk band. at 3 p.m., historian Catherine Martin talks about women on the radio in the post-war period on the Radio Survivor Show. At 4 p.m., we hear brand new music from Kopech's PG6 on the WGXC Afternoon Show live from Accra. And at 10 p.m., Christopher Michael Hefner is live in Accra with Nighttime with Christopher Michael Hefner on 90.7 FM WGXC.
Yeah.
That was 2023 new music from Inna Baba Kalubali with Utanakam from the 2023 album Dijili Koral on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Welcome back with Randall Martin. And you know, this time of year is such a great time of year in Hudson because it is a time of festivals and events and a lot of things to do. And among those great things to do is the Sankofa Festival that is happening very soon. And we have on air today Elena Mosley and company. She's with a bunch of her students today, and they're going to tell us about this year's events and activities. Elena, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having us.
It's always a pleasure. Now, you know, I didn't want to mess up the date, so I didn't want to mention it. But and then I know that there's multiple dates and multiple activities. So why don't we start telling us about the date of this year's event, and then we'll get into talking about yourself, your students, and your organization.
Okay. This year's festival, the Hudson Sankofa Black Rocks Cultural Festival, begins on Friday, August 11th, and the family day is on Saturday, August 12th. And we have a rain date for Sunday, the 13th.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So it sounds like a very busy day. Now, for those who are listening on this date, it is Monday, August the 1st. We do a lot of replays of these shows. But that, if you're listening today or sometime this week, that is this weekend coming up.
Yes, it is.
So, get ready for another great year. And before, now you've been doing this for, again, many, many years, over a couple of decades. But why don't you give our audience who don't know about this a brief history of your event and about your organization. And then we'll get to the students and all the activities.
Okay. Well, I have to say that this event started around 1960, 1961. So we have pretty much decided to use 1961 as the start date because we have interviewed some folks, and that seems to be the most accurate time. So this started as a block party on Lower Columbia Street, and it was started by moms who wanted to get their families together. And there was many families that were involved back then, and these families got together and started the Black Fest, and that was the nickname. It was called the Black Fest, the Hudson Black Fest. And it then was transferred or taken over by the Women's Progressive Club, which is a Black women's social group that started in the 50s. And they had a history of organizing scholarships at the middle schools for kids and things in the community and having an annual dance black and white fundraiser. So after doing it about 10 years, Operation Unite started, and they came to us and asked if we would take over the festival. They wanted to turn it over and and put it into some new hands. So that's pretty much where we started from. We came in and saw that the Hudson and the county did not have a Black Arts Festival that was highlighting achievements of Black and brown people, not just locally, but also across the state. And we also wanted to make it in a festival atmosphere that would involve vendors and some commerce with local and out-of-town artists and bring in local and regional entertainment. So I think that's it in a nutshell that brings us forward to the event.
Well, you know, there's not a lot of events other than sort of national holidays that I can say started before I was born. But this is a great event, and it's great so that people can see the history and the context of this event and the significance of this event. And thank God that your organization was able to take it over and keep up the lineage and build on what happened previously and then improve it.
Yeah, well, we consider it an honor, you know, to have had the opportunity to do this. And, and we're looking forward to more community input. There's more things happening in the Black and brown communities these days in Hudson. And I'm excited about passing the torch to folks and making sure that they can make it relevant and honor their history and move forward to the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, all right, moving our way up to, and you know what, again, I always want to give a thorough amount of information for those. Give a little breakdown about Operation Unite. What do you guys do? I, of course, know. But what do you guys do, and a little bit of history there?
Well, wow. That would be, I would have loved to have our youth answer that question. I don't
sure.
want to put them on the spot. But you can a little bit later once we get past the festival, because I can see they're going, oh, wow, who's she going to call on? So in terms of Operation Unite Educational Cultural Arts Center, we are a youth-based organization, which means our target population is youth and also the families. So what we've been doing here is providing opportunities that really span the scope of education, cultural art, the education, cultural arts, recreation, social, you name it, it's all in there. And the main focus of Operation Unite is to provide this vast array of activities that will allow our students to have an awesome college resume so they can go on to the colleges, universities, and trade school. And really, that's it in a nutshell. So that's the overall mission, to produce the well-rounded youth. And then from there, what we want to do is to continue to support them and support their families. So we do branch out into the community. So, of course, the Tustin-Sankofa Black Arts and Cultural Festival falls under our cultural realm. And there are other community activities that we have so that we can invite families. But I would say an example for each, yes, the Hudson-Sankofa Festival, of course, is under culture. It's also under history. Under the academics, in the fall, we start our college visits. So we have college clubs for the visits, and we also have the college prep program, which is the junior and senior track program. So those are examples that fall under the academics. And, you know, recreation, we look to go to concerts and plays and any type of entertainment that's going to point to careers and artists and real people. So we get the opportunity to talk to people after the shows and bring artists in. I would say that dance, which is one of our largest programs, gives us those opportunities to talk to real people and find out what their journey was about in their careers. And any other things that could happen under that would be, you know, writing workshops, different types of workshops, depending on the students that we have. We look at their needs, and we just really try to focus on how do we help move our youth forward in the community.
Well, I can tell you as a former board member that you do great work over there and have probably I can't tell you how many thousands, but you've helped thousands of students to academically be better, to be more culturally rounded, more rounded, and really give inspiration and offer students opportunities that they wouldn't have had otherwise. So again, hats off to you and Operation Unite for all the work that you've done over the years. And so you've got some great students with you today that are going to help explain about this year's activities.
Yes, I do. Some great students.
Can they introduce themselves? The one that you have, the ones that you have included in this interview.
I certainly can. Let me just let them introduce themselves, and then we'll get on with the program.
Hello, my name is Sadia.
Hello, my name is Ume, and I am a Youth in Action member at Operation Unite.
Hi, my name is Addison.
Okay, what are your grades? I mean, what, not your school grades, but what grade are you in, I should say?
This is Sadia, and I graduated high school this year.
Excellent.
And I will be starting Columbia Green in the fall.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. Next.
This is Ume. I am going into 11th grade, and I go to Hudson High.
Very nice, very nice.
Hello, this is Addison. I recently graduated high school, and we'll be starting my fall semester in Columbia Green.
Very, very nice. Very, very nice. And so who wants to start? I mean, because I'm sorry. Go ahead, Elena. I was going to say that I know that, you know, every year you guys have some of the same things, some new things. There's a parade. There's several different elements to the event. Anyone there? You know, take the audience through, the event, the activities, and what it takes to put on, you know, this very large endeavor.
Well, you know, I'm going to start with the event and tell you a little bit about what's going to happen. I'm going to have the youth tell us different sections of the event. And then we could come back to the makings of the behind the scenes. Oh, is that okay?
That's perfect. That's perfect.
Hello. My name is Sadia. I'm a Youth in Action member of Operation Unite. So August 11th is the opening ceremony, which will take place at the Hudson Riverfront Park from 5 to 9 p.m. And we'll include a capoeira roda at 5 p.m. and community open mic with Loki at 7 p.m.
So from here, I'd like to have our guest who also a youth who just joined us, and she's going to tell you about this section of Saturday and how we begin.
Hi, I'm Dominique, and I'm a Youth in Action member and also an AmeriCorps member.
Welcome to the show.
I'll be talking about the Jake Kofa parade. It starts at 2 p.m. and the location is at 7th Street Park and goes all the way down to Warren Street to the waterfront. And if you'd like to join us, the lineup starts at 1:15.
Excellent.
Okay, so for the parade, we are inviting members of our community and organizations and agencies, especially in Columbia County, to join us. And as Dominique said, we're going from 7th Street Park to the waterfront. So we're asking people to bring their banners. They can bring their folks to march and even come in cars or vehicles where they might be able to put their banners across the car so we know who they are. And we're hoping that if they have music, that they will bring it too, because everybody loves a live parade, especially when Bindlestiff Family Circus and Operation Unite are sponsoring the Tiosoka Stilt Walkers. And they are an exciting entity that's going to be in the parade.
Very, very nice. You know, and it's always such a lively and colorful parade. You know, I've seen horses in the parade. You know, there are floats. There are just a lot of things happening. Kids, adorable kids, you know, dressed up in costumes. As you mentioned, the stilt walkers, which is quite fascinating. I don't know how they do it, especially I don't know how they do it from 7th Street all the way down to the waterfront. I don't know if I can make it even a block on stilts, but somehow they're able to do it and dance, on several blocks. So it's quite an amazing thing to see, and it's just a warm feeling and vibe of a great cultural expression and representation of the Black community regionally.
Well, one of the highlights of our festival that we brought several years ago. That seems to have been a secret component and only in recent years has become more evident is our school supply giveaway. So I'm going to have someone else tell you about that.
Okay.
Hey, this is Addison. I'm a Youth in Action member, and I'm inviting everyone to please join us for the school supply giveaway for the Listen Culture Festival. It will be down at the waterfront at 6 p.m., and the giveaway is for grades kindergarten through 8th grade, and high schoolers may register for a gift card.
Very, very, very nice.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
They must be just starting to show up at places. I know we're getting closer to the presidential elections and things that are be coming up next year. So, you know, I think that's playing a big part of them coming out, as well as, you know, being empowered by that song, Try That in a Small Town, which is actually something that they were playing and blasting while they were out doing their demonstration the other day.
So this song by the artist Jason Aldean, right, came out only maybe 2-3 weeks ago. And, you know, people sort of commented right away that this had, like, at best, like a reactionary, if not outright racist message, and including the fact that the video was shot in front of a courthouse that actual lynchings had taken place, right? So there was a lot of debate, but it seemed sort of theoretical, like people are saying, oh, look at this song, it's bad, and of course other people are responding, it's good, and we see this kind of argument so often. But the fact that it took such a short time to kind of manifest itself in real life like this is kind of remarkable, you know what I mean?
I mean, it is, and it isn't to be expected. When you make a song, which, once again, the music video, you see shows people protesting for Black Lives Matter, people exercising their rights, and then they get twisted to showing, you know, times when people were rioting and doing things like that, to show that that's what all that Black Lives Matter has been doing, and that we're dangerous, and that pretty much it's not allowed to be happening in a small town, because in a small town, they're going to take care of you, the good old boys are going to take care of you and quiet you down, which is actually, you know, crazy. It's not surprising to me at all that, you know, it's going to have the effect that it's having. It's empowering people to go out and, you know, commit hate on people, plain and simple, especially in small towns, apparently.
Why do you think they were in Saratoga? Any idea specifically why they were there?
No, I mean, I would imagine there is, you know, a Black Lives Matter movement that's been going on in Saratoga Springs for quite a while. We've seen a lot of different characters and people show up at these city council meetings recently from all different types of organizations. So I'm not surprised at all that they would come there. Would make sense.
Can you say a little more about what you mean about that? Because, you know, your organization has been having a big presence at the city council meetings and speaking out and sort of coming into conflict with some members of the city council. But what are you referring to as far as other groups showing up?
Yeah, there have been a group representing, I think, 7076 group, alliance group or something. Like, they showed up to one of the meetings pretty much saying they were there to protect the police and things like that. So, you know, we've had groups that are, and we have other groups who are people who are from wherever they're from. I've had shirts that, you know, have came in and had, like, homophobic things on their shirts, racist things on their shirts, and they came in there that speak public comments. Just to cause disruption because, you know, they're not even from Saratoga Springs. They don't even live in the area, which they even stated. So we've had those type of people come there to heckler people while they're speaking at meetings about, you know, their traumas and things that they want changed in their community.
So these reactionary groups are paying attention to this stuff. It doesn't seem that far-fetched then that they were there because of the activism that Saratoga Black Lives Matter has been doing.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, it's widely known. We've been all over the Capital Region doing things and even going at. I've been to plenty of Proud Boy rallies you know, everybody, all the other little groups they have. And, you know, they usually know me by name and know of my group, you know, and they let me know that. So, yeah, they're watching for sure.
So talk a little bit about the differences between the Proud Boys having their short rally on the street versus Saratoga Black Lives Matter and the protests they've held.
Oh, there's a stark difference. Anytime we've had any event, and we're not just talking about protests and demonstrations. We've had vigils, candlelit vigils for people. And we've even met with police force and police being on the scene at all times with their lights, sirens going off, with a tank that's owned by the Saratoga County Sheriff's sitting around the corner for us when we had our event for Daryl Mount, August 31st of last year and the year before that. We've seen this happen since 2020, and we've always been met with resistance from the police. Obviously, they are not met with any resistance from the police. There is no elaborate plan on how to deal with them when they come and show up. There was no police presence whatsoever when they were showing up. I didn't see one cop in the video. So, you know, we were met with completely different things. They also had a truck that had Law and Order written on it. So apparently they think that they're Law and Order vigilantes or whatever they think they are, and the police are empowering that by allowing them to do what they're doing. Yes, it was a short rally, but even when we've had short rallies, the police were still there. And there was also always a plan, like a whole game plan and a whole plan for it to how to deal with us if this happens or this happens in scenarios. We've seen it, you know. We've seen pictures of us on little plans that they've had that has been involved in court cases and everything else that Saratoga Springs has done. So, you know, complete difference. Proud Boys are known to be a violent group. They're known to be misogynistic, homophobic, transphobic, racist, you know, anti-Semitic, that type of group that they are. And it's known. They're proud of that. They're proud, right? They're proud boys. They're proud to be that. And the fact that Saratoga Springs allowed them to come there and, you know, be unscathed, come through. You know, they did block traffic. So they did do that. They did have a car parked in the middle of the street. You know, they did break laws. So it's not like they didn't break any laws.
This is like a Broadway in August in
Whitney.
You know, yeah, on the Whitney track day, right? I mean,
yep.
Not a quiet day in the city.
Not at all. July 14th, you know, when we were out there, 2021, we did our rally. We did our protest. You know, we were met with force. People were slammed to the ground. People were tackled. People were arrested. At least, I think about 13 to 14 of us were all arrested because of that protest. And obviously, there is no arrest or anything being made whatsoever of the Proud Boys who showed up with masks across their face.
The mayor asked for a report on this to be delivered by Thursday, and that report would have to come from Jim Montanino, right, with Public Safety,
yep.
who's been a recurring, you know, figure in the activism that you guys have done. What are you expecting from the report? Do you have any thoughts about his connection here in this case?
Of course. I believe that there is no report. You know, he already stated that he had no idea that they were even showing up. He didn't know how long they were going to be there. He didn't feel that there was a need to bring on any more police officers. So I highly doubt that there's any report to be given because I don't think that they took it serious whatsoever. But once again, when Black Lives Matter has any kind of event, there is an elaborate game plan. Like, literally, Jim Montanino, I already know that he does not care about, you know, what they were doing. He didn't speak. I haven't heard any words of him speaking against anything that the Proud Boys stand for or what they have done. And Jim Montanino has been, like you said, in the forefront of the fight against the changes that we're trying to make in our community. And that's clear. That's clear as day. I mean, it's like every time that there's anything going on, it goes back to Jim Montanino doing something wrong. And he'll never state that he does anything wrong. He's sitting here fighting against the whole city council. So even when you were saying earlier that we've been, you know, getting in the rifts with the city council, you know, honestly, the rifts have been with Jim Montanino. Hasn't been with anybody else in the city council. Every single person on the city council besides him has actually spoken to us. We've had conversations. We've had meetings. But when it comes down to him, you know, he is a thorn that's going to be something that's going to be trying to stop progress in our community and trying to bring us backwards instead of forwards.
So what are you guys working for? What are you hoping to move towards as you continue your activism?
I mean, for one, we're working towards, you know, having those 50 points that we've been fighting for, which is part of the executive order 203 set up by former Governor Cuomo to, you know, of police reform to actually be enacted in our community. Within those 50 points, there's so many things that are big. One of the biggest things that we are trying to build as well is an emergency response team in our community, you know, divesting from policing and investing in the community by actually empowering, you know, people who are there, psychologists, the people who are there, social workers, who actually know what to do when it comes down to mental health calls, demilitarizing the police, getting rid of the all the crazy equipment that they have as if they're ready for war against their own people. And, you know, once again, reforming police and have some sustainable change. That's where we're moving towards. You know, we're moving towards when we move towards this, we move towards in all different angles. You know, we can have community events. We can have get out to vote events. We can get people to, you know, get to the ballot and make some changes. We can get people to, you know, show up at these city council meetings to speak out at things. We can have community events where we bring our community together and we feed each other and we eat together and be one as a community. So, you know, our goal is to continue doing that and to build on that, you know, and to keep pushing the envelope for change, plain and simple.
Now joining us for our weather segment, once again, is National Weather Service meteorologist Hugh Johnson for our weekly look at weather and climate. Welcome back, Hugh. This is Alicia.
Hi, Alicia. How you doing?
I'm well. Yourself?
Good.
Wonderful. And talking about things being wonderful, this weekend was very nice. But I did think that I saw some smoke in the sky on Saturday. Are we still getting some of that? And what's the latest on the Canadian wildfires?
Yeah, I think there was a little smoke, Alicia, on Saturday. I noticed that, too, and I even thought I smelled it. And the air quality index was moderate, not terrible, but a little higher than good. Yeah, they're still up there. They're still cranking around. The worst concentration of the fires are in Western Canada, but there are still some stubborn ones just to the east of James Bay in Quebec and a few others even further, a little further west than that. But the brunt of them are out west now. Now, and I think we did get a little plume, but not enough to cause any problems. Now, here's the thing. They're still going, and they've already burned nearly 20 million acres of forest. That's almost two-thirds of the area of New York State. So that's pretty amazing. And also, they have produced a lot of pollution, 290 megatons of pollution, more than double any year. And this is only through the August. It's not even the entire year. So they've already smashed that record. So, and unfortunately, it looks like that ridge that's been out west is going to stay there much of the time for the next week to 10 days. So it's not, they're not going to get any help from Mother Nature. Now, it looks like the ones further east over Quebec will be getting some rain there in the next week. So that should help the cause there.
Hi, it's Bria. I'm having trouble with that idea of 290 megatons of pollution. And I've heard that the Canadian wildfires were so bad because they didn't do controlled burns. But don't controlled burns have their own challenges? Can they get out of control?
Absolutely. In fact, in 1999, we had one get out of control right here on the wonderful pine bush on late April 1999. The antecedent conditions were ridiculously dry. We were working on our second driest April, and it started off calm. That I remember this day. I wasn't the fire program leader at the time, but I was home, and I could smell smoke from it. And I remember that the winds picked up a little bit later on in the day because there was deep mixing going on in the atmosphere. And it got a little windy, and the combination of that and the extremely dry fuels led to the fires. I don't know why they did it that day. It was really a big mistake. Now, I became the fire program director a few years later, and I made sure that it would never happen again. I always made sure I was in good communication with the folks over making these decisions. But control burns are important because they get rid of a lot of debris that can really build the fires build on. If you can get rid of that underbrush and things like that, you can actually minimize the damage or the spread of wildfire. The problem in Canada is it's huge. It's vast. If you try to drive to James Bay, the road is only one road. It has rocks on it. It's very remote. So when fires start in remote areas, it's hard to get to. So you got to give them a little break there. Absolutely.
So wildfires are burning down forests. And isn't deforestation a reason for our increasing CO2?
Yeah, it's part of it. It's not the entire reason, but certainly it's part of it. Basically, what happens is trees absorb carbon dioxide. But the problem has been that 440 million of the 10 billion acres of forest were removed since 1990. Now, think about that. That's huge. Most of that has been down in Brazil and other South American countries, the deforestation of the rainforest. On the other hand, in this country, in North America, our forests have actually grown a little bit, especially in the Northeast. It actually has gone the other way, just a little bit more. So, but the net loss is great enough to cause a problem. Now, there is some hope. I mean, they're still doing plenty of deforestation, but the rate has gone from 19 million in the 1990s down to 12 million in the 2000s, and now closer to 11 million of loss of acres. It's still way too much. And unfortunately, as we all discussed before, it hasn't done a thing to reverse CO2. So probably what's happening is there's so many other things now that have taken over as being a major issue. But it is definitely a concern, deforestation. There's no question about it.
So besides the rainforests in Brazil, it seems like locally, I mean, throughout the U.S., there's also problems. Does the popularity of lawns add to the limitation of forests and of greenery?
I actually don't think so, because, again, as I just mentioned, the overall forest is going up. I mean, you're saying that the people with all the big lawns and no trees, we're actually going to try to plant some trees in our lawn because it doesn't grow grass anyways. So we're thinking of doing that ourselves. But I think that is not, in the scheme of things, a big problem. It could be a problem. But again, overall forestization in North America and Canada is really not going down. People might think it is, but it really isn't. So, but it's going down in the Central America, where the that's where the real problems are. But, you know, it's definitely a concern for sure. Yeah, it would be nice to put trees up anywhere you can to help absorb carbon dioxide. Absolutely.
And Hugh, I think during the pandemic, we were seeing in some places a bit better air quality because people were staying home, or there were the transportation industry wasn't getting as many customers. I'm thinking big business could be a part of it when we're talking about CO2 and other issues and the reasons why just adding trees isn't really helping to reverse it. Is that thinking in the right direction, or am I off?
Totally in the right direction. It's all about big business. It's all about making money, the GMP. We're not going to get into the whole political thing, but we all kind of know that there's two sides to the story, and the one side is opposing the other, and, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, basically, we are the fossil fuel companies are still very strong. They still have a command over the economy in this country, even though we are seeing increased electric cars, and that's good. And other green energy, we still have fossil fuels. And as long as we have them burning the way we do, we're going to have problems. So you're absolutely correct.
Thanks, Hugh, for joining us once again. We look forward to talking with you next week.
My pleasure.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Signal faded, listen to what I'm saying. Testing, testing, this better be worth all of the breath I'm wasting. Maintaining radio silence from now on. Barricaded the talk radio station, hostage taken, the red on L at chance on something cheaper, that passes for free speech will have to do. String starts strumming, another humdrum conundrum. Signing off now, maintaining radio silence from now on. But there's one thing I should have said, the hostage will voices drowned out by too much choice. There's not to mention the sad waste of this wonderful invention. Maintaining radio silence from now on.
Between a king and a chick and a poet.